growth requires more than capital.
Why do we call it the cheat code? Nobody said growth had to be fair.
Revenue solves everything.
Welcome to the cheat code. What was our fastest path to revenue?
We tend to like to do things the hard way.
What's the cheat code? It's giving yourself an unfair advantage over the others.
What is it that really works, and how are we going to grow these organizations?
That's our cheat code. Hello and welcome to another edition of the GTM Cheat Code. We are again in season two. Alongside me today is Justin Gray. Justin, you're back in the saddle.
Saddle feels so good.
Yesterday we had that young, good-looking guy, Sean Kester, on the show replacing you, so we have to get back to the old guys again.
He's doing ollies or some shit. He can't be bothered with podcasts.
Doing backflips on the slopes and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That sounds about right. Well, we're super excited to continue season two, which is focused on partnerships. And today, our guest is a dynamic go-to-market leader who is passionate about partnerships. He's, in fact, the Ted Lasso of business growth, a partner motion advocate, the co-host of GTM Unfiltered, a partner at Red Monkey Consulting. Judd Borkarov, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, we're super excited. And,
I always laugh when people read off your accolades and you're just kind of like, who?
Are they talking about me?
Right.
I always think, did I really send that long of a bio over? Like someone reads like three paragraphs of it. I'm like, shit, I got to cut that down.
Yeah, it's like time to adjust. Here we go.
Well, you guys could just be like me and have no accolades, and that's really short and easy. So, yeah.
You just be like, just Ted Lasso, Judd, cool, we're good.
Well, Judd, we're happy to have you on the show, and we love to jump right into it and give the people what they want, which is your ultimate partner cheat code. I know you're passionate about this. Tell us about it.
All right, so I'm going to give you the cheat that it doesn't even sound like a cheat, but I have found, having worked with a lot of companies on helping them develop their partner motion and expand it, the one thing that I have found that expedites the growth in partner, gives the type of returns they want, is the upfront preparation. Now, this sounds super simple, right? Oh, be prepared. Great. What I found the vast majority of the time is you go in and what do the executives want out of partnership, if they even know they run partnership, is revenue. We want more money and we think that's the way to get it. Now, ultimately, we all know that's what it is, but there's no thought past that. There's no thought down to the, as an organization, what does partnership need to look like for us to be comfortable with it and expand with it? Like, what kind of percentages are we working with if we're doing some type of a referral? If we're co-selling, what is our communication process? What are we okay with and not okay with? And then going down to even more of a strategic focus where we're looking at it now first, maybe by segment, by specific persona, or whatever it may be in the way that we're developing our partner motion. And just the understanding of the expectations, what we want to get, what we're willing to give, how we want to do it, what that may look like, and then taking this all down to kind of a wants, needs, limits focus allows us, one, to align with the partnership better. We're going to be able to speak on at a level and understand, like, here's what we're willing to do or not do, and here's what we will not compromise on, which allows us to have a very focused conversation to, one, understand if we're right for partnership, and two, to set the foundational pieces that allow us to grow this program and have strong communication and hit goals and targets, where most companies will say, cool, now that we've signed the paperwork, go. I haven't seen many of those work.
Let me guess, you've heard, hey, so partner guy, what are we getting out of XYZ partnership? Trying to avoid that.
And the worst, though, is even if they're having amazing results, they don't speak the same language. The nomenclature is different. So if I'm talking to my CRO, who speaks direct sales, for instance, and I'm talking to him about a partner attached or some other metric that really they're not that intimate with, they don't understand how that affects his bottom line. Well, guess what? You just spoke Spanish to a guy who speaks one language, English, and he's going, I don't even know what you just said. And he's like, that's great. Don't break anything, right? So even alignment on nomenclature becomes extremely important. And I think you can do that at the corporate level, because if the organization is on board with partnership, there's more resources, more allocations, more areas of focus, and they want to see it successful. So they're going to put in a little bit of effort to make it work as well.
Yeah, I mean, really you're talking about expectation setting, right? And so, but square one, how do you get the organizational, really kind of the top-down buy-in that this needs to exist. Because to your point earlier, like, this is not a muscle that is well exercised. This is, you know, I think these guys are a good fit. You sign the contract, then it's like, do something with it. You're really trying to get people to embrace a totally different behavior here. So I assume showing people what good looks like is a good place to start. But how do you find to get that initial kind of buy-in and traction?
Yeah. It all depends on stage of company. And the only reason I say that is if you've never run partner before, where am I going to get metrics? Now, we can look at standardized benchmarks. I can say that, hey, we have 77% more likelihood to close a deal if I'm running it with a partner versus not. Great. Well, that's good to know. Closing percentages is great. What does that mean to our bottom line? You can take that. So at an early stage, I'm going to look at least benchmarks, look at your closing percentages, look at our ACVs and create an ROI story that helps them to better understand what does partnership potentially do for us? Because we all know that if I can suddenly drive 5% more revenue, 10%, 15, 20, and we can understand it at that ROI level, this is an easier conversation to have, and it's easier to get buy-in from the executive level. Now, if I've run partnership, even if it's been very haphazard, like for example, maybe our top rep partners with a specific group, and that's how they've closed a lot of their deals. I'm going to build my ROI story around, look at what we've been able to do with this specific partner, and this is unstructured. These are now our benchmarks based on what we're already seeing, and imagine if we can level this up. So building the story around the actual dollars and ROI that we can expect from doing it properly and giving them an expectation on investment return really helps to sell it up and gets buy-in where they're willing to actually take part. Because we know the harder part isn't just saying, yeah, yeah, go do it. It's getting them to actually be a part of it to the extent that this is a primary motion that we're going to invest in and do like any other thing like direct, right? Or PLG or whatever it may be, it's got to be invested in the same manner. And that's why you really need that buy-in. So that's how I tend to go about doing it and find that it works pretty well.
Yeah. And I don't want to walk over what you said at the beginning, because the idea of taking what you measure already and applying partnerships to it is a simple way to measure the success of where you think that can happen. Like you said, if you're a startup and you've never run a partner program before, let's not just measure leads or something like that. Let's take our entire funnel, apply partner to all the different pieces of what we measure, and then see what changes and set some benchmarks from there. Having no benchmark is a benchmark in itself, right? And then now we can start to figure out, okay, partner actually maybe doesn't supply that much net new lead volume, but what it does do is creates a higher ACV and deal velocity, right? There's something there. So then that makes us think a little bit differently about the other partnerships. So I thought that was really, really poignant, because people just don't do it.
Well, you know, the funnier part is people don't track it either. So even people that I've seen who have strong partnership programs, they're tracking partner attached, let's say, for example. What partner is attached to this deal? Did it close or not? Great. So we say there's revenue associated. At what part did they influence? What am I really getting out of that? And to your point, what you just said, maybe it's not a net new, maybe it's not new introductions, but they're able to facilitate closing at a 50% increased rate. Guess what? That's a lot more money still. So therefore, thinking about it also and then saying, how do we want to track it to make sure we fully understand it is kind of one of those steps that I also think falls apart, because I've been in enough Salesforce instances and HubSpot instances to see that the only thing you see is partner. That doesn't tell me much. And it's really hard to dig into the data, better understand how to evolve it if I don't really know what's happening.
So we had Jared Fuller on the show a couple weeks back, and I love this concept applied to something that he said. So like, we've talked a lot about the internal value prop and like the internal goals for that particular partnership. But I think something that most organizations neglect is what is the value to that partner, and clearly outlining that, right? Like what are we bringing them to the table at a business level? Oftentimes that's from a client perspective, but then really like the AE role, their marketing team, their CSM team, right? Like what's the value that they're going to experience, and like, why do they want to work with us? And then clearly communicating that in this plan as you would a marketing plan, right? Like, this is how we're going to go execute against this. Let's make sure they understand the value as well.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's just the direct value. Sometimes it's indirect value. Hey, it's going to be less time that you have to spend per customer because we're going to help educate. Or, hey, we're going to provide you with all of this content that you're going to be able to basically cut and paste. Or you now have introduction emails, which take it off of your plate faster for CS side, right? AEs, hey, guess what? Now you're going to have an ability to close those deals that you're struggling with at the end of the month. So finding the individual personas and be able to sell through. So, I mean, for all real thought here, the job of the partner manager or whoever is setting this up, and normally it's not like you need to go a little higher sometimes than the partner manager, though, is to truly sell that partnership internally to them and to your own individuals as well. Because without the alignment, then we come into, are we doing a centralized approach, a decentralized approach, and so on, right? Without the alignment and people truly buying in and understanding that there is value to be had, they won't even test it. They won't look at it. So I always like to start with a very small, we'll call it pilot test, to be able to say, hey, we're going to take these two reps, one good, one not good, with these focuses. We need this one marketer. We need this one CS person, whatever, and your partner manager. We're going to go after this. We're going to go after it for 3 months. We're going to show you the results. Hey, you have a 12-month sales cycle. We know we're not going to close deal, but we're going to see how much faster we can move it or what new deals we can drive into the pipe. Now I've got something to actually show to everybody. And if you suddenly your best rep just leveled up, everybody's going to go do. Every rep's going, yes, please.
Well, even understanding that they have a 12-month sales cycle, like those are just details that aren't gathered as a whole right now. Like you have to understand what the inner workings of that partner, how the value they provide to clients, your stronger together story, and then ultimately like what are you dealing with on a day-to-day basis that I'm going to help, you know, to your point, like some of that is, you know, subjective, some of that is like really black and white. But like, where am I going to improve your business? And so I'm curious though, like you set this early stage benchmark, how often do you revisit that plan? Not only from a results perspective, but from an optimization perspective.
So I like to give things a little bit of space initially. Really relook at it until I've got about 3 months data. Okay. Now, obviously this, let's use that as a standard, but it's going to vary on your sales cycles. It's going to vary on your product, who you're selling to in some of those areas. What type of partnership, right? Because we're talking about partnership in general. And we all know there's like 14 different types you can run out there. You know, which one are we running? What should the expectation be? And how long does it take to get traction? So I like to revisit it in a time frame where I've gotten enough data to be able to actually relook at it and not have just looking at like outliers, but enough true data that I can normalize it and say, okay, we have a pretty good idea of what we've been able to do and what we need adjustments on.
I don't know how.
I wish there was a better answer. I wish there was a better answer. Like, no, there's a set time.
It depends. It's the consulting answer.
Worst answer, best answer.
Yeah, but some of the subtle nuance of what you were saying earlier and even to what Justin was saying, if you're a first-time CEO and you're a founder in a startup, that's not even on your radar. And I'm talking about things like, hey, I just got an inbound. Say I'm a sales rep, I got an inbound. And I find out that inbound that I got is using one of my partner's technologies. The fact that you can call, if you have a relationship, that rep at your partner and say, hey, I just got an inbound from so-and-so. They're using your thing. What was your sales cycle like? Who made the decisions? What was contracting like? Do they have a procurement process? Like all of a sudden you've taken like 2 months of stuff you have to find out and shrunk it down to a phone call. And you can't tell me that doesn't shorten your sales cycle. Like a CEO who's first time dealing with a partnership saying, hey, go out and find me a partner is not thinking of any of that.
No, and that's the thing too. Everybody thinks a partner is really easy. So I'm going to shoot myself in the foot a little bit, but also level up here. Partnership is probably one of the hardest motions to run. There's more moving pieces in it than anything else, right? You have humans as your breakpoints in numerous components. But in my opinion, and at least the data that I've seen, it's the most powerful above all else. It creates trust. It creates velocity. It minimizes spend. It allows for that better together story does wonders for brand too. Mm-hmm. So there's so many value components that you get from running a partnership motion that most people don't think about. And the reason is because it's, oh, we've got it. It's going. Why are we not seeing results? Well, we didn't invest in it. We didn't put the time and energy. We didn't look at it like we do any other component of our business. And that, I think, is one of the biggest misses that we're seeing in that area.
So do you have, you know, I guess in your experience, as you're trying to get organizations to embrace things in this manner, like, do you show them an example? Like, is that, or was that kind of like more of a storytelling exercise? Like, what do you do to show them what good looks like?
Put on my sales hat. Once again, wish it was a one size fits all. It depends on how they are seeing the world, what their big issues and problems currently are, what they're trying to solve for. Understanding, have they ever done partner? Because if we've got scar tissue that I have to work through, it's a very different approach than somebody who's never really been in it before, never seen how it operates or had a bad experience. So a lot of it really comes down to, like, you got to put on your sales hat, be your enterprise salesperson, really do discovery to best understand what the value they're trying to get and where, what scar tissue they already have, so that you can kind of put together the plan to show them what could be. And look, I'm the first to tell you that some organizations should not do partnership. There are certain
product offerings. What are some of those indicators?
Product, customer. So, also internal readiness, let's say. So for example,
that's a huge one.
It's probably one of the biggest, but it's also the hardest to kind of ascertain. You can look at it from, what's our headcount, what's our available time, what resources would be a part of this that could dedicate how much of their effort. And looking at that from a point of going, okay, we're already running two motions. We're stretched thin. We need revenue. We're looking for the most efficient revenue growth, which really means we don't want to invest anything in it. Let's do partnership.
Right.
And that's what I see the vast majority of the time. So if somebody is in that position, I'm like, you don't want to do partnership. You need to prepare for it. You need to understand what will be needed to make it work. And will it be what you expected? It could be more than that. But that means you have to go in wide-eyed and prepared, or this is not going to work. And then also, look, if you've got a high velocity sale, maybe partnership works, maybe it doesn't, right? Like, if I got like a $9.99 sale, do I want somebody reselling me? One, do I have margins for it? What's the value that I'm really getting out of it? Yeah, I get top line, but you got to understand the goals that they're trying to attain as well. So to some extent, partnership really does, like any other motion, need you to fully understand the business and the business objectives to align and make sure that it's going to be the right fit.
Yeah. The reason I keep harping on this, like, how do you, you know, show someone what good looks like? We just had this conversation this morning, right? Like, we've got a founder who totally, you know, enterprise sale, like, great fit for partnerships, yep, totally is bought in on the partnership concept. But like, every step of the way, we have to remind them what they should be doing, because the mind just goes in a totally different direction, which I would argue is like all of this, you know, as you called it, scar tissue of, you know, the quote unquote B2B best practices. And so, you know, they just came off a trade show, great show for them, big lead list that they want to, you know, segment and assign out. And the first dimension they looked for was like size, you know, proxies for revenue and size of companies. All right, those are going to be our best fit customers. Let's source those out to our AEs. And we're just like, dude, like, why are you not looking at which one of, you know, what partners are attached to those organizations and using that as your first rung of segmentation there? He's like, oh, that makes total sense. Like, you know, I got to change this whole thing up. And it's just like, dude, like, every step of the way, you have to remind people that they, yep, I mean, it's holistic.
Yeah. I agree. You know, I like to use this. So for example, I'm gonna have you guys do it too. Cross your arms for me. Now cross them the other way.
It's so hard. I know, it's terrible.
The reason I have people do that is change is very difficult. Something that you're not accustomed to doing takes time and feels really awkward. Mm-hmm. So for people to shift from direct sales mentality to partner first mentality takes time and effort. And you do have to remind them over and over and over. But you get 6 months in, you get a year in, and it becomes second nature. They start thinking different. They go, mm-hmm, first thing they think, hey, we're going to the show. Which of our partners are going to be there? Can we do something jointly together? Hey, maybe we should do a joint event and then share the leads. Now, all these leads, who of our other partners might also be attached, which is a different conversation than they've ever had before. But right, that takes time. So I get what you're saying, and I agree. It's really difficult, but that's why when I'm working with them early, there's more touch points. there's more touchings. What are we doing? Where are we at? And we're not even talking partner yet, right? We're just going, what are the things that are coming up? What are our marketing efforts? What are our current sales? Where do we have stall? How can we use partner to move things forward? Oh, you're not thinking about that. Let's have that conversation. And that eventually, for in my experience, has driven the change in mindset and honestly created a lot of advocates for partnership, because now they're thinking different. And when they can see it from a different perspective, they really understand the value that it drives for the organization.
Yeah, well, oftentimes time and nuance aren't things that an early stage founder is comfortable with, right? Because many times they're coming from a product or an engineering background and they're learning how to go to market in general. And they have very black and white tendencies, right? Especially the engineering folks. So partner now is not black and white. Like, it's super nuanced. So to Justin's point, it's like, there's all these things that you should be doing and should be thinking about. And for them, it's, wait a minute, like you said early, revenue or leads or whatever it may be. We just need to call them. But that subtlety and that nuance that comes with partnership is interesting. So we had Cassandra Golston on, the CEO of PartnerTap, recently, and she was saying for early stage companies, it's probably best that you just focus and find one really good strategic partner that you can not only test this on, but really rally around the customer, right? Like, make sure that that partner is you share the same customer, you share the same this, that. How do you feel about that as a way, especially for these early stage companies, to start to ease their way into partnership?
Yeah, no, I'm going to agree. Less is more in this scenario. Yeah. We already know there's going to be limited resources in early stage, right? So we've got to figure out how to do it. Now, I will address one thing, though. And to your point about like founders that tend to be, let's say, product people or dev, mm-hmm. right? One thing that I found is really helpful is nomenclature is the biggest win or loss in anything, right? If we don't speak the same language, we cannot communicate. And it becomes very apparent quickly, right? Put a CRO and a CNMO in a room and they're talking about different things, even though they're talking about the same thing. So I always try to find that level ground. So you're talking to a guy who comes from dev and a product guy, maybe you start talking about, so think about this like a scrum. Everybody has a responsibility during the sprint to achieve something. Then we're going to come back together, verify that it's been done, make sure what the next step is going to be, make any adjustments and move forward. It's the same idea.
That's really good.
Now they're going, oh, okay, I get it, right? But you start talking about, you know, LTVs and sales velocity and things like this. And they're going, I know the words because I'm in business, but I'm not really sure how it all plays. So I just found that really helps to change the mindset. So back to your question about, do you go after one and maybe go very deep and strategic? I love the approach for numerous reasons. One, you're building muscle memory. We're going to start doing something consistently over time, which gets us to feel comfortable with it. Two, easier to prove. I've got less resources allocated. I can put focus on maybe I'm using one rep with certain support components, right? Instead of, hey, I want my whole sales force to be thinking this way, because it, like, we get it. There's breakage at each individual touch point. So I love the idea. I think the hard part is, though, most people don't know how to identify a partner.
Yeah. Talk about that.
So figuring out who your best fit partners are is work, right? Like, we need to sit back and this goes back to the organizational partner plan or a strategic partner plan or even a needs, wants, limits list that helps us understand what do they need to look like? What do they need to fit into? How do they need to help us? And then maybe we go look at, hey, where do we have coverage with these people, right? Like, so if we don't know, if we're not connected, so let's say we're not using one of the platforms that allows us to see overlap in client, potential client, then we're going, who do we know, who do we run into every time in a sale, right? Who do they plug us into? Who implements us on a regular basis? Who's already using our technology as maybe a tech-enabled service? And looking at the different components of how we could potentially play will not only help us identify who the best potential partners are, it's also going to help us identify what the best potential motion to run with them is. So not just partner, but are we doing a co-sell motion? Are we doing some other, like, is this a reseller? Is this a referral program? Like, what are we doing? Are we going to potentially find a way to do some kind of technological alignment, right? What partnership does it, what would be the most benefit to us based on what we understand our needs are. So I agree.
Yeah, the critical aspect of that is, you know, all of that was customer centric, right? Like who's bringing us in, who's implementing our software, so on and so forth. Like all too often it's like, all right, well, who are your best potential partners? Google, because they're really big. You know what I mean? It's like, well, is that feasible? Like, do we have alignment to teams? Do we see them, you know, in the same buyer that we serve and so on? So like that customer centric approach, I think is such a critical kind of footnote to that exercise in terms of identifying partner.
Yeah. Well, and something else you said there, 100%. Judd, it got me thinking about the old LeadMD days. So in the first 5-6 years, our only partner to what we're talking about was Marketo. We didn't have another one. However, we did look at other players in the marketing and sales tech ecosystem as data points for what would be a good fit, right? So if someone was a Marketo customer or a Marketo prospect, but also had Vidyard, SalesLoft, and Sixth Sense, we'll say, we automatically knew, even if there wasn't a formal partnership there, those were a better target for us, right? So it even narrowed our scope a little bit more. And then as we matured and hit that inflection point where we said, I think we could take on another few partners. Well, guess who our first calls were? Vidyard, you know what I mean? So it like naturally, right. You know, surrounding yourselves of what a really good customer looks like based on that partner ecosystem, even if they're not formal partners, is an interesting exercise.
It is, and it really is, if done right, not even just from, so right now I'm working on let's just say one of the large players in their partner ecosystem. Sure. They've got a really big ecosystem to do. We're trying to get their top 8 into play. All of them are great fits. They're all integrated. They all have these things, and they're all very different and have different needs and desires of the partnership. But what we find is when at least 2 of them are present with this bigger player, the LTVs are much higher. The sales cycles are much shorter. And this is even before partnership, just when they play together in the same sandbox. So now I got a story that I can now say, oh, wait a minute, this makes absolute sense. We already know that it works well. Now we can collaborate, sell faster, sell more with the higher LTVs. Why not, right? So those are things that like I'm fully aligned with how you guys did it. I think it's perfect because now you also understand, okay, so now what's next?
Yeah.
Where are we missing? Where are our gaps? Do we bring in another partner who fills here? And it starts kind of building out the program in a way that really brings massive value and allows all of the partners to expand.
Yeah, I think there's so much obvious to partnership, but what isn't obvious is the amount of effort that goes into it, to your point earlier. Because, I mean, as you're looking at your customer ecosystem, the folks that spend more money on more technologies are probably going to be better customers for you, right? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I think if you can get organizations to embrace just like those fundamental no-brainers and then show them, you know, all right, so now that you're bought into it, what are the tactics that you really need to execute here? Like, to your point earlier, like people just need to develop that muscle memory and see what that truly looks like from a day-to-day basis, and the yield will come. I think that's the overall promise of partnerships. Like, this will not be bad for your business, but you really do need to have a different frame of mind in terms of how you approach it.
Absolutely. I one thing that I think is not always thought of in partnership, though, when you partner with people, a lot of times that partnership also leads to either brand equity, or it adds brand equity or decreases brand equity based on the way that the relationship goes and the experience. So when we go, hey, we're partnered, right? And we're not working on the partnership, we potentially are damaging the brand, which can slow our sales cycles. It can create more damage down the road. So like every motion, right? Because I could put like 1 AE and they could destroy our brand, right? Like, but so it's not, oh my God, partnership does this, but it needs to be something that we think about. We need to be thinking about how do I not just incentivize these people, how do I enable them? Do I give them all of the things to better represent our organization easily without thought so that I am always at the forefront, that they want to work with me because I've made it so easy for them to work with me that there's no reason they wouldn't because they know they're going to make more money doing it. So that's one of those areas where you really need to be thoughtful. And I would say if we go back to the cheat code, The enablement may be the next major cheat code that I would say would be something they should be thinking about. That enablement can be so powerful. Like imagine this, the CSM is on with a customer that you're chasing for, you know, with your partner, and the CSM has a direct, like, oh, let me show you, boom, what they, you know, a little bit more about them already in front of them. Oh, that looks great. Would you be open to connecting me? Sure. Cut, paste, done, right? This means that the CSM now made the customer feel better and they're being incentivized on retention. So guess what? They just did a great job. Or if they have any incentivization on growth, they potentially just got a partner attached and potential credit. So lots of these really interesting things that like nuances that you don't think about in partnership and you should.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a lot of the really good things that either we've all done or we should be doing. Talk to us a little bit about something you've seen gone horribly wrong in partnerships, a horror story, if you will.
All right. No names. No of names.
Just rhyme it with someone.
Right. Well, one of the companies is no longer in existence because of so that's the bad part. I watched one partnership that looked like it was going to be glorious unravel so horrifically, lawsuits, all kinds of things.
Wow.
Because the miscommunication screwed up the implementation so badly that they took down one of the major systems of a different organization.
Wow.
And normally these things, you don't hear these stories, right? Because I mean, you think, oh, they don't need to be aligned on implementation, right?
No.
Maybe they do.
I can tell you do.
Wow. Yeah. And so I saw it get to the point where, you know, a month goes by and they can't use one of their primary data-driven systems.
Tools, mm-hmm. right.
And I knew at this point, this thing was done. Because nobody goes a month without having access.
Sure.
And it just got worse and worse and worse. One company no longer around. The other ones had to save face. They're not the same size they were. So yes, partner can go really wrong. But just the caveat, so can everything else.
Sure.
Every motion. Like we're in business, right? And look, your best salesperson can sell the biggest deal that's ever been done with the company. Maybe it's a $100 million deal. And then the implementation blows up and you never actually close.
Well, we've seen that, you know. I don't want to say hundreds of times, but many, many times. And I think it just underscores the criticality of, you know, if you're going to come together and sell something, like that something needs to be rock solid, you know, because to your point, like that has a lot of ramifications. And I've seen kind of, you know, products and features hurried out in the spirit of launching a partnership, or, you know, hey, we got to do this by, you know, what would you call that? Idea force. I won't say the actual name. Suddenly that comes around and you get all this hype and then, you know, the fallout happens because this was more of a go-to-market focus first, which should have been a product focus. So you've got to have those things in order. And certainly, to your point earlier, like that brand equity, you're either adding to it or unfortunately maybe taking away from it.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. You were talking about the different types of partnerships earlier and this sounded like a technology partnership, right? Like the two technologies, or am I reading that
wrong? It was both. They were co-selling and technology, so that the integration had been sold hard, and it wasn't ready.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that
and it just blew everything.
Those integration technology partners have their own nuance, right? But you know, we're big advocates of consulting partners, as I imagine you are as well. But that whole idea of tapping into the trusted relationship, you know, oftentimes the big consulting partners have the deepest relationships with these organizations. And if you can offer them another service line around your technology and, you know, cause at the end of the day, software sales reps oftentimes, I mean, even the very, very best are going to be viewed as software vendors and it's hard for them to bridge that gap between trusted relationship. And I ran into this all the time at Marketo. Like, why do they talk to you different than they talk to me? I'm like, well, because you have one thing to sell. I have a whole open stable of people who do lots of different things that just happen to, you know, fall into your wheelhouse. So I think that consulting angle is one that often gets overlooked because the technology ecosystem is sexier, for lack of a better term. But I do think that shortened sales cycle, trust, shortening of the trust cycle, all that comes almost a little easier on the consulting side.
I agree. The other thing, actually, I put a lot of focus on the service provider side to actually be the catalyst for partnership.
Yeah.
We know that as, you know, we'll call it somewhat body shops, strategy shops, whatever you want to call us, right? It, you know, we're doing work. We have bodies, people that are doing the work. Our margins are different.
Correct.
Right? We're not a SaaS company where I hit a certain revenue thing and everything is just profit. So we understand that there's a financial component we need to be thoughtful of with our go-to-market strategy, and partnership allows them to minimize overhead and potentially drive greater demand. Right. And they always tend to be at the center of multiple tech partner relationships, right? Because they're the one on the ground. They're the one who's saying, hey, we did an implementation with you two guys' software and we realized these were some of the problems. So they're also their ears and eyes on the ground. And they're also the people touching it on a regular basis. They're in front of your customer and actually having conversations. Those you want. You want to make sure that when you get a partnership ecosystem going, you have those service partners. They're going to do so much for you, even if it's just as a listening channel, that will drive massive returns for you.
Yeah, totally agreed. Well, listen, let's shift gears a little bit. Tell us a little bit about either Red Monkey Consulting or sure. GTM Unfiltered, wherever you want to take us.
All the stuff. So Red Monkey, we're about to rebrand. So we're going to actually be called Rev Symphony. You should probably see that by the time this comes out. Maybe not. We'll see.
Our man, Michael Davis, would love that. Like the symphony analogy is his ultimate for marketing.
There you go. My partner was actually a professional singer. And so that it kind of made a lot of sense. She's awesome. Deanna Ransom. And what we do really is all go to market. So that means from understanding your current and existing state, doing an analysis and understanding that, to strategy, to execution strategy, to execution, and even to an outsourced level. Some people, they just realize that, like, for example, they don't want to own marketing in-house. They know what the strategy should look like, but maybe they don't have the manpower. They've got 5-6 people in and they need a lot more firepower. We can come in and help there. I tend to like to go soup to nuts. I like to really understand the highest level of what we're trying to accomplish. And that just helps us to really move them in the right direction. Every company, no matter how good they are, you can take the best company in the world, they're going to have inefficiencies built into their programs. They're going to have foundational components that are really weak. They've got other ones that are very strong, but they're always going to have those weaknesses. And we've just found that by shoring those up and improving those to a level, you can get such a massive return that it just makes absolute sense. Now, when we're dealing with earlier stage companies and they're looking for that next level, they've got to shore these things up. There's no option, right? If they don't get it shored up, they're going to go into the valley of death and die. That's it. For the ones that are later stage, you know, they're looking, they're so used to incremental growth that if they can take from 4% year over year to 8% year over year, that's massive, especially once you hit that like $1 billion mark. Mm-hmm. That's big money. And that will change everything for your organization. So we really love to kind of get in and understand where the inefficiencies and where those broken foundational pieces are that allow you to really take it to the next level. And a lot of it comes down to communication and nomenclature. I mean, I've just talked to too many executives now where they have a success story and it always starts with, I came in and the first thing I did was make sure we were speaking the right language.
Very cool. So what's your ICP? Who should be thinking about talking to you?
I would say right now, anyone who's trying to get partner off the ground or is struggling with partner and they know it's the right motion for them. Other than that, I would say my sweet spot where I think I enact the biggest change for an organization from that 10 million to 50 million mark. We work with companies 1 million and up, especially if they've raised capital. But we find that once you get to a certain size, one, you've got that product market fit. You've got something that's repeatable that we can then really make sure of the foundations and accelerate. So that's why we use kind of that 10 million as kind of a start point. At that point, we can at least say, look, we're not selling to our moms and our cousins anymore, right? We've made some repeatable, sales. Yeah. We kind of understand who we're selling to and the personas and what that looks like. And now we're trying to figure out how do we put it all together and really take it to the next level. So that's where we play a lot. But we've got customers, you know, 1 billion plus, we've got customers 1 million. Plus.
Love it. Well, how should folks connect with you?
I would say LinkedIn is my number one. I'm all over there. I try to put content out consistently. Call it for my own well-being, I get a little annoyed with the echo chamber in there sometimes.
Oh, you and me both.
I try my best not to provide more echo and provide, hey, this is real world information that we can use. So that's probably the best place. Send me a message there. I'm always responsive. Love to have conversations, and I'm a big believer in network. So even if you're like, hey, I don't even know if I can work with you, but let's have a conversation, shoot me a message. Love to talk to you.
And check out GTM Unfiltered because it's an awesome show. And definitely check out our episode, which is the most engaging of the season I've heard.
Best ever.
It's the best, yeah. Well, Judd, thank you so much for joining the show.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having
me. Yeah, it's our pleasure. So if this is your first time listening, welcome to the GTM Cheat Code. Please leave us a like or a review or something like that. Go find Judd on LinkedIn. I guarantee it'll be a good follow. And this has been another episode of the GTM Cheat Code. Judd, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Growth requires more than capital.
Why do we call it the cheat code? Nobody said growth had to be fair.
Revenue solves everything.
Welcome to the cheat code.
What was our fastest path to revenue?
We tend to like to do things the hard way.
What's the cheat code? It's giving yourself an unfair advantage over the others.
What is it that really works, and how are we going to grow these organizations?
That's our cheat code.